But before we get into that, just remind you that last week, Jessica so ably reminded us, who were here and those of us who weren't, that the Apostle Paul in Ephesians chapter 2 was writing to a church that was facing significant challenges. They were few in number. They were feeling insignificant in the face of the powerful Roman Empire. And to this beleaguered church, Paul invites them to remember that they are God's beloved, rooted and grounded in love. It seems to me that on a regular basis, as we do confession during our Sunday morning worship and perhaps throughout the week in our personal private devotions, that we do so acknowledging that we fail so often to comprehend the breadth and length and the height and depth of that love of Christ. And so we confess that we often doubt ourselves. We sometimes compare ourselves to others. We diminish who we are as people and what we have to offer. And we work hard believing that somehow we please God by our work and our efforts, and we fail to live into our true selves as individuals and as a church. So we build confession into our Sunday morning worship, where we reorient ourselves again to our belovedness and are drawn back into that ocean depth of God's love. The love of God, greater far than tongue or pen can ever tell. So that's the first week, and we need to keep that in our minds and in our hearts as we move forward into this call this week to follow Jesus on this journey of discipleship. The way I decided to structure this sermon is to simply spend a little time on each of these particular texts that were read for us already this morning. The first one from John chapter 13, set in the context of John's version of the Last Supper, where Jesus is saying goodbye to his disciples. Earlier in the chapter, we have the only recorded demonstration, the only recorded recording of the disciples having their feet washed by Jesus. A powerful demonstration of servant leadership. In sharp contrast, I believe, and direct in your face to the powers that be of the world, of the Roman Empire, where leadership was through coercion, through bullying, through power, and domination. But Jesus says, I give you a new commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. By this, everyone will know that you're my disciples, my followers, if you have love for one another. Jesus had left no doubt about what he meant. I'm convinced. For their feet were still damp, and the towel, dirty and wet, lay before them, right beside the basin. Love on display. Yes, love is a verb. Not often I strip before the congregation on a Sunday morning. But I'm reminding you that love is a verb. You can read it on my chest now. We might wonder, how in the world can Jesus command love? A new commandment I give you. When the Roman Catholics hear the Mass, a Roman Catholic friend was telling me this, at the beginning of a particular service, there's a collect or a prayer that goes like this, and the priest says it. Almighty, ever-living God, increase our faith, our hope, and charity, and make us love as you command. Make us love as you command. To his followers, Jesus emphasizes that to love is not just a nice idea or a suggestion, but a command. In our world where we think that love is a feeling, and indeed we can feel the emotion of love, we certainly can't command feelings, can we? Feelings come unbidden and without thought or intention. But the love Jesus calls us to is a love of making choices, an active love, and a love that is a verb, a commitment to do, to say, to model Jesus. And by the way, these T-shirts given to us last year at Orlando, where the Mennonite Church USA gathered for our convention, and the theme was to love as a verb. Remember, we had a banner here as we prepared for that event. When we know the depth of Christ's love for the cosmos, we too are infused with this love so that we begin to look at others through the eyes of Christ. And practicing this kind of sacrificial and countercultural love is not easy, but we have been given the Spirit of Christ. And Jesus tells us that this is the way others will know that we're disciples, that is, by our love for one another. A watching world will not read our scriptures, they might not even read our T-shirts, but they will be drawn as they notice people loving and caring for each other in the community of faith. I'll point out a few examples later in the sermon of how I see that happening among our small fellowship, and we can think together about ways we can do that to a greater degree in our second hour as we continue this theme. Then in the Matthew 4 text, Jesus calls Simon Peter and Andrew, James and John from their profession of fishing to a life of discipleship. And I wondered, what drew them to Jesus? What was it that caused them to leave family, profession, and into something they'd had no idea what was coming? And I can't imagine that it was anything other than having been shown love by Jesus, and a sense that their lives would never be the same again should they decide to leave those nets and follow. And as they stumble after Jesus, this motley crew realizes that they are in for a journey unlike any other. And we hear then in chapter 10 that Jesus called his disciples to a large and demanding task, to heal the sick, to preach in the street, to cast out demons even, and money, clothes, and home, and family are to be thrown aside, and persecution is to be expected. And his followers are to be fearless in the task of becoming God's chosen ones, the embodiment of God's kingdom here on earth as it is in heaven. But here, as if to remind the disciples that the kingdom comes by grace alone and not by their efforts, Jesus closes this chapter 10 with this one final command. And whoever gives even a cup of cold water to one of these little ones, truly I tell you, none of these will lose their reward. And I can imagine the disciples at that point saying, huh? What'd you say? and become maybe a little bit offended by such a statement. For they had left everything to follow Jesus. They had given up homes and jobs. They'd have calloused hands in the business of healing and caring. They had risked their lives in taking the gospel into the streets. And here Jesus says that something as meager as a cup of cold water is also an act of discipleship. And indeed, to most of us, this is very good news indeed. We who generally fail at casting out demons, I don't remember the last time I cast out a demon, or who would just as soon find praise rather than persecution, even we can open the doors to the kingdom of heaven through an act of hospitality as small as that of giving a cup of water to a thirsty person. A simple cup of water becomes a matter of discipleship. But we might be among those who say, huh? Because we like to think of things big in this country. We like big church buildings. We're impressed by European and American cathedrals and mega churches. We like stories of churches growing at astonishing rates. It's hard not to like things big in the average entree in a restaurant these days. It seems often it would feed four people rather than one. Often smaller churches like our own are left to feel like failures unless they manage somehow to grow into a bigger church. But in today's gospel, Jesus gives a different picture, an upside down one even, where small, seemingly trivial acts of faithfulness that don't get noticed by the world are in fact important and life-changing. For the Church of Christ, smaller might even be better. And I wonder if it wasn't comforting to Jesus as well, for whom the crowds at this point, which had once been large, were now diminishing. And even those 12 would abandon him. We disciples, here, we can do small. Let someone more obedient than us do the big and dangerous work of the kingdom. We'll do and take Jesus at his word here in Matthew 10:42, and we'll run with it. And it's good. And in a world as broken and fragmented as ours, a simple act of kindness, a welcome to a stranger, a little genuine hospitality can sometimes feel very radical. I know it because recently the doorbell rang and I peeked out to see who it was before I answered the doorbell, or I would have immediately just gone and answered the door some years back. We live in a fear-dominated culture where we hear bad things happening to those who dare to get involved. So that answering a doorbell fills us with dread. Visiting a hospital or a retirement community means encountering the sick, the lonely. Saying, I love you, means actually mouthing the words that are audible to another person to hear. Greeting or even nodding to a stranger on the streets of our borough seems odd, but it's a practice that as I run on the path, it's almost a challenge for me sometimes to see whether I can get another person that I meet regularly to nod or greet. And it's amazing how over time it seems to begin to happen. In this kind of world, a world of walls and barriers, violence and loneliness, Christian hospitality becomes indeed a prophetic act, a clear act of being a disciple. So it's not a small thing. A book that our small group finished reading a while back by Diana Butler Bass by the name of Grounded has a story about Diana being in an airport, noticing a man who was sitting near her at the departure gate, and he's softly crying. She musters up the courage to go over to him and introduce herself and invite him to tell her what's going on. And he does and explains that he's just buried his wife in that location and he's now flying back home, all alone. Diana invites and gets permission to sit with him silently in his grief. And when she boards the plane, she tells the flight attendant about her new friend. Word spreads throughout that small airplane of the grieving husband. And at their destination, when you hear the sound of the bell and everyone unclicks their seatbelt and rushes forward, or at least stands, no one left the aisle. Everyone stood, but waited for this man to make his way down the aisle. And as he did so, numerous people offered him their love and concern and compassion. He's then at the front of the plane, escorted off the plane by the crew. This act of simple hospitality gave this man a sense that God and others were with him during this difficult time in his life. Diana, this small act of being a disciple of Jesus, demonstrating her faith in action, realizing that love is a verb, takes a risk, a small risk, but still a risk. So discipleship grows out of the depths of Christ's love for us and for the world. And our neighbors, I think, are hungry to see a demonstration of that love. So we welcome, we engage, we touch, we make ourselves vulnerable to one another and to others, showing hospitality where we can, making peace. Small acts of discipleship done in face-to-face, hand-to-hand, person-to-person, simple planting seeds, the way of Jesus in our world. Getting involved in this kind of way, even when it seems small and harmless, is always risky. We always are having to face the voices within us saying, no, don't do it, it's risky, it's stupid. It's not no big thing. It won't make any difference. But whether we are confronting the injustice of our political system by writing a letter or making a phone call, or simply offering a small act of hospitality to others, we always risk finding our lives by losing them, Jesus tells us. It's the great irony of the gospel. When we reach out, when we open our lives, in even the smallest of ways, in breaking bread with someone and finding and sharing a cup of cold water, we encounter another. We find communion. And we receive as much as we give, the overflowing hospitality of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Some of you know the name Jean Vanier, who was born in 1928, the son of the Governor General of Canada. And after serving as an officer aboard an aircraft carrier in World War II, a disciplined and devout Roman Catholic, Vanier heard God's call to working with those who have challenges of mind and body. So he came back home, he purchased a house and invited three men to come and live with him, beginning the Arche community throughout the world. This is French for the Ark. And there are Christian communities around the world whose mission is to have, quote, able-bodied and, quote, disabled persons living in community with one another. These communities tend and continue to be places of welcome and peace for some of God's most vulnerable children. In a book that was written about him, there's this quote by Vanier: "We don't have to be heroes. We don't have to do big things, but live each day in love, doing little things, learning to welcome one another, particularly the weak and those in pain." In our confession this morning, we were given the words to the powerful statement by Menno Simons, the Dutch priest who became an Anabaptist, who was hated and hunted by officials for standing in the way of Jesus, and for whom the name Mennonites came to be. Mary and I have the plaque hanging on our wall. Some of you know that, and I think it was an MCC quote, and maybe 10,000 villages made in the Philippines with straw. This statement of Menno Simons. Let me read for you the full statement of Menno Simons, and you compare it to what's in your bulletin or what's before you here. That full statement is this: true evangelical faith is of such a nature it cannot lie dormant, but spreads itself out in all kinds of righteousness and fruits of love. It dies to flesh and blood. It destroys all lusts and forbidden desires. It seeks, serves, and fears God in its inmost soul. It clothes the naked. It feeds the hungry. It comforts the sorrowful. It shelters the destitute. It aids and consoles the sad. It does good to those who do it harm. It serves those that harm it. It prays for those that persecute it. It teaches, admonishes, and judges us with the word of the Lord. It seeks those who are lost. It binds up that which is wounded. It heals the sick. It saves what is strong. It becomes all things to all people. The persecution, suffering, and anguish that come to it for the sake of the Lord's truth had become a glorious joy and comfort to it. Now you know why the plaque's smaller. It would have to be very big to include all of this. It's a tall order for Menno Simons, a tall order from Jesus. And we know, don't we, that Jesus' disciples don't always get it right. They often miss the mark. They fail to fully understand what he's up to, but still they followed. It doesn't mean that they were always steadfast in their commitment, that they never had doubts about Jesus' mission, but still they followed. And so it is with you. You may not know everything you would like to know about Christian faith. You may have doubts and fears, particularly after hearing Jesus' words today, but still you follow. You are following, teaching in the classroom, in the tennis court. This past week I had the privilege of being with Ron and Tim at Doc Academy for Pastor's Day. And in the chapel, we heard John Hindley, the person who is doing Spiritual Life Week there, talk about the upside-down nature of the kingdom of God and what it means to be a disciple of Jesus. And I'm thankful for the dedication of Doc Academy, for the love of Tim and Ron have for their students, and the respect that I sense from other faculty and staff for them. And I know others of you, from day to day, you're at your desk relating to a coworker. You're at your exercise class, building relationships with people quite different than you. You're greeting the guy with the dog who constantly seems grumpy. You're volunteering at Care and Share. You're growing flowers and beautifying places. And as a nurse, you are offering a word of care to a patient scared and lonely because of cancer. You're offering words of comfort to those who've lost a loved one on a day-to-day basis. You're taking a curious boss to lunch and talking about your faith. You're baking pies and sharing them with neighbors and friends and pastors. And that's just a small, small slice from this small church. And we have opportunities before us, even today, for demonstrating our love. We've been invited to provide funds for MCC relief kits, and we'll, in a couple of weeks, assemble those kits with our two sister congregations, Deep Run East and Blooming Glen Mennonite Church. In a couple of weeks, we're going to have a booth at our Percussy Borough Fall Fest, and you have opportunity, and some of you volunteered to be there, providing a presence in our community. You have an opportunity to walk or to sponsor walkers in the Pennridge Crop Walk on October 14. And you have an opportunity to be a disciple when Jumpy and Leona again organize and prepare a Thanksgiving meal to our community, now scheduled, I believe, for November 10. Is that right? Right? November 10? Thanksgiving meal, November 10? No. So, yes, Father Menno, true evangelical good news faith cannot lie dormant, but spreads itself out in all kinds of fruits of righteousness and love. And yes, Brother Jesus, by this will all people know that we are your disciples by our love for one another. Amen.